Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast. Standing on top, not gonna stop. We came to play. Ain't slowing down, falling off. We're here to stay. And we're stomping on whatever's in our way. I'm feeling like a giant tonight.
It's Thursday, January 25th, 2018, and this is episode 132 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. It's been a while. We're back. It's the off season. The hot stove has been burning a little bit lately. And I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me tonight, not from Florida. He's moved one state over. Georgia. Yeah. From a pecan farm, of all places. And then, hey, the home state of Buster Posey, I guess, right?
That's right. Go ahead. Yeah.
Eric Nathanson, welcome.
I was going to say, I'm Eric Nathanson. When we first got here, I Googled Buster's hometown and how far away we were. I swear to you.
Yes.
I think we're about 3 hours away from it. I'm in the southern part of Georgia, very rural. I live on a dirt farm now, but life is good. So I'm ready to be podcasting.
That's cool.
Yeah. I have pecans surrounding me, all I can eat. So since we're starting up 2018 here, you know, we can hit the ground running and attack the Giants. Cause you're right. Like the hot stove has just absolutely been jumping for the Giants. And we haven't gotten a chance to touch on it yet.
No, we haven't recorded since before the World Series. So, I mean, literally 1 minute or less, cause it's old news now. The Astros won. I think we're all happy for that as Giants fans because the Dodgers didn't win. But just to recap real quick, one hell of a series. That was a lot of fun to watch. Those games were incredible. I know Game 7 was boring, but it was boring in a good way for Giants fans because it wasn't really threatening at all. But, man, that was just a crazy series, back and forth with all the home runs. And the Astros were victorious, and they successfully held off the Dodgers from winning another World Series since I was 15 years old. So that's a good thing.
It is. You and Willie both picked the Astros to win it all. I took the Dodgers, and I totally paid for it, and I'm glad I did. It wasn't a reverse jinx. I just thought they were better, but the Astros, they were phenomenal. Like, up and down the lineup, it reminded me of the Astros from a couple years ago. That was a fun World Series.
No, it was a fun World Series. The SI, you know, issue, which was, you know, became very popular. We had talked about it prior to the World Series, so we were aware of it. Has become a collector's edition. I did actually make a bet with my big boss at work, like the head of the head of the head of the bosses in the hierarchy of my work. He's a Tigers fan, but he wanted a bet for a lunch. And I figured at the time, you know, the podcast, I voted with my heart. I said, oh, the Astros are going to win this. And you were much more on point in the earlier rounds than Willie and I. We missed on a couple of those teams. The overall champion, we did get the Astros, so we got that one right. But that said, I did. He said, look, I'm going to take the Astros. You know, do you want to take the Dodgers in this one, you know, for a lunch? And I figured at that point I was going to do it because on paper, I really did think the Dodgers were probably going to win it. And I figured I'd get a free lunch out of it. Right. So if the Dodgers were to win, I'd get a free lunch. If the Astros won, my heart is quelled. Everything is right in the world. And all I have to do is buy this guy lunch. So I figured it was kind of a win-win. So I took the bet. So I still have not taken him out, but he's nagging me on that. So
that's fine.
Yeah, yay Astros! So they're going to be good again this year. So, geez, let's catch up with the Giants. It was a cold, hot stove. It was a cold stove for much of the season because of, you know, the luxury tax and all these free agents coming out. But it started to move, and for the Giants, they've been one of the most active teams in all of baseball. And we're going to start off with, of course, the signing in December, the trade, I should say, for Evan Longoria. That was definitely something that we heard about that was a possibility, but I was surprised that the Giants did pull it off. And this is all after, which we never podcasted about.
Yeah, the Stanton stuff.
The Stanton stuff, which was, I don't know, man. I'll be honest with you. At the time, I wanted Stanton. Of course, who wouldn't want Stanton on their team? And it's not my money, but it is my money. You know what I'm saying? Because I was a little concerned that they signed him for $25, $30 million a year for 10 years, right? And that's just going to – that's it. That's going to cripple the franchise financially for a decade. How many of these guys, like the A-Rods what's his face in Texas – and all these other, you know, long-term contracts have just
Prince
been albatrosses.
Fielder?
Josh Hamilton.
Oh, Josh Hamilton.
And yeah, others sign these extremely long, high-cost deals. And, yeah, it could pay off. Even Albert Pujols to a small degree, right?
Tick down.
They pay off in the first couple of years. And after that, they're just crap, man. They're just absolute crap. So I was worried about that.
$197 million is the golden number this offseason, and I don't think we'll dig too deep into that today and crunching the numbers for the Giants, but they've stayed below that tax, luxury. Because they've been paying it out, and the payments compound, and they're at a point where they need to reset it, and it will give them a clean slate in next year on the free agent class as well, and they get to start overpaying the luxury tax. And then the luxury tax itself is going to run out from the CBA like 2 years after that. So the penalties that they can incur are so much less, which is why they're staying under the 197. Stanton was a guy they was willing to break the bank, and I'm with you. I wanted him. But after hearing him say he gave a list of the final four teams, and the only reason he met with the Giants was just to see how good organization does things and never had any intention to sign with them and use them as leverage, I'm kind of in a screw you Giancarlo mode now. you know, I mean, like, how dare you? How dare you take the Giants and use them as leverage? You know, these fans, we're all starving, 98 losses, and to toy with us and to use this as leverage. So, I mean, it's good now that they can do that with the luxury tax since they didn't land Stanton, which is what has been able to make them, you know, make these deals. Like, they got cash back in this Longoria deal.
I know, that's the thing they got cash back on. And, I mean, he does balloon at the end of his contract, but they did get rid of Denard Span. And he was basically making the equivalent to what Longoria makes the next year or two. So that's kind of a swap, and I would definitely rather have Longoria than Span. So that's a win-win there. And they got, whatever, $14 or $13 million back. So that's going to help offset the back end of his deal, which,
but
you know,
that's
it's
amazing.
Probably not going to look very good at the end, to be honest. But
the Tampa Bay Rays.
Blow.
Think about that. The Tampa Bay Rays, the cheapest franchise in all of baseball, paid the Giants millions of dollars to take Longoria for, you know, all Span and Royal. Like, who's ever heard of the Rays paying for another team's money? Usually they're the ones that are getting, you know, like $20 million back on somebody's contract or something like that.
Yeah, that's
they're usually getting offloaded.
Very strange deal. Very strange deal. And I know a lot of Rays fans are not very happy about the deal, but the Giants got their third base, you know, their third baseman. They had, you know, 10 players that played, no, sorry, 7 players that played at least 10 games at third base last year. Think about that.
Wow.
I mean, that's a ton. That's a ton of players, man. 7 players playing at least 10 games at third base. It's like the only team in baseball that had that issue. So,
and I probably couldn't name them all right now.
No. I couldn't either, man. No way.
Well, I mean, Longoria's projections, he's, how old is he? 32, is it?
I think 31 or 32. Yeah, because I think McCutcheon's also like 31 or 32.
32, yeah, 32 in 3 months. There it is. His projections for the year through like Fangraphs and Baseball Reference, they look pretty good. He should be a, you know, 23, 24 homer guy. You know, so strike out under 20% of the time. You know, he doesn't walk a whole lot, Longoria. But, like, he's going to put some pop in the lineup that the Giants haven't had, especially from a corner position, since Pablo was really good 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Pablo. Yeah, speaking of him, we'll see if he's even going to be on the team this year. I imagine he would be because of his cheap contract, but that's a story for another day.
I might not need him.
So Longoria, he's a 270 career hitter, which is okay. It's not the best, but of course he comes with a lot of power. He has hit 20 home runs in all but one of his seasons in his career. So I know that may not directly translate well to AT&T Park, but I think it's reasonable to expect him to hit around 18, 19, 20 home runs this year, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I fully expect him to be over 20 home runs. Left field is reachable for a guy like Longoria. His swing is good for left field of AT&T. He'll definitely be able to fly some balls out of there. That's funny, that year that he had under 20, he only played in 74 games.
Oh, no, and it was because he was injured that year, exactly.
Yeah, but he still hit 17 home runs in 2012 in 74 games. Granted, that's six years
so
ago
you
now.
Right, so the extrapolation, and his home run rate per 162 games is quite high. It's probably close to 30 at that point.
I mean, it's a lot more pop than those 10 guys gave them last year at third base. I mean, Nunez close, was like the... I mean, I guess Nooney was the most one with pop, and that was just when he seemed to get it. But other than that, and we've all been screaming about, you know, run production in the middle of the lineup, and that's what Longo is. He slates as a three or four hitter. So, I mean, I personally, I've watched him for years. I'm a big fan of this trade. I think he is going to relish being with a winning franchise, and I think he's really positive. I'm really shocked so far by the Giants' moves this offseason. I'm really happy. So I like the Longo deal.
So the next deal, which happened a little more than a week ago, of course, is Andrew McCutchen, which was also rumored for quite some time as a target of the Giants after the Stanton deal did not work out because he grew up a Dodgers fan, by the way. We didn't mention that. And that was literally part of the reason why he wasn't really certain about going to the Giants. Also, he was a little reticent about the fact that they had such a poor record last year. He really wanted to play for a team he thought was going to do well. So I think if the Giants had a better year last year, it would have improved their chances of signing him. But regardless, you know.
Yeah, but like you said earlier, that would have been
locked. Superstar and the Dodgers offered me a huge contract, I'd be like, well, I don't know.
They would have been locked into this huge contract, though, for years. It's like you said, I think that was a blessing in disguise that he spurned them. I really do.
No, because if they had signed Stanton, that would have been it. I don't think they would have done anything. I mean, they might have gotten Austin Jackson.
They're building depth all of a sudden. Like the Giants are building depth. It's what I've been screaming for like 3 years on this podcast for them to do.
No, it's true. So they got Kutch, and man, he's a guy I think a lot of Giants fans have admired over the years. And he seems like he has the personality, the work ethic, obviously the talent to do some really, really good things in San Francisco. There's no doubt that his best days are behind him. He's 32 years old as well, I guess. And so,
just under it, yeah.
And he's only signed to a one-year deal, by the way. So the Giants only have him for 1 year guaranteed. We don't know what's going to happen after that. So it is what it is. He had a great campaign last year. No issues at all with that. I think he's going to have a fine campaign this year. His defense is above average. It's not spectacular, but it's good. And he's moving from center to right field, apparently. That's been confirmed with all of the interviews. And but, you know, right field in AT&T is like center field in a lot of other parks. Long ground to cover, so he's still going to be, you know, let loose and wild and free and be able to do his thing. But I wouldn't say it's a downgrade or an upgrade from Hunter Pence. Hunter Pence definitely could cover, you know, right field very well. But he's going to learn a lot from Hunter, who, by the way, is also moving over to left field, which is going to be interesting to see him over there. But Andrew McCutchen, your initial thoughts. I thought they did not have to give up too much for both the Longoria and the McCutchen deal, including, you know, Ramos and other prized possessions in their system. They did have to give up Crick, who... He was solid in the bullpen. I think he was a future star in the bullpen. But I think when you look up the whole of both trades, that you got to give up something to get something. And that's what they did. But it wasn't too much, I don't think. What are your thoughts?
And they got cash back from the Pittsburgh Pirates, a team that's been notoriously cheap to go along with Andrew McCutchen. I don't understand what's going on anymore. they also had to get rid of Brian Reynolds, who I thought had some potential as an outfielder. And there's future considerations on the Pittsburgh deal. I don't know what the hell that's going to mean. I like the deal. McCutchen still got speed. I think it's an upgrade in right field. I think it's an upgrade offensively, defensively. I think he's going to shore up that corner spot. And knowing Hunter Pence and knowing how much Hunter loves the Giants and loves winning, I think he's going to take them out to that wall and they're going to work their asses off. And Hunter's going to show Kutch, you know, how the ball goes off here and how the ball goes off here. And I think Kutch is going to listen, because much like when he was with the Pirates, he never got over the hump past the wild card game, past the first right. round. And he probably is going to see a really good opportunity with the Giants. You know, he shared a workout video like 2 weeks ago where he's flying. He's running it like 23 miles an hour.
He was booking, man.
He really was. So I could totally see him covering that ground. It's an upgrade. Like, and then having Hunter just come out of right field in my mind and moving him to left is an upgrade, because he was just not seeing the ball the same off the bat. The spin and how the ball fades coming to a right fielder more than hooks coming to a left fielder. Uh-huh. I think that was starting to get to him. The ball was running away from his glove side. You know, a lot of times we saw errors was to his glove side as he's either diving or running in on a ball or having to move to his left. And I think it'll be better in left field, because those balls will hook into him more if he has to cover ground from right to left, from his right to left, yeah. you know, from the left field line towards center field. So I think that one move upgraded both right field and left field at the same time, while leaving, you know, still the question mark, who's going to play between them.
Yep. And that was the next acquisition the Giants made just a few days ago. And they got Austin Jackson, signed him to a 2-year deal for only $6 million.
So cheap. I don't understand.
It was so cheap. In fact, some of the baseball analysts in the Sabermetrics were saying, so last year he was like a 1.6 WAR, right? And that's, according to their calculations, is approximately the value of $14 or $15 million a year. And they got him for $6 million for 2 years. So they were saying, in terms of WAR, this was a steal. This is an absolute steal. That includes defensive metrics, of course, in that WAR calculation. And Austin Jackson has never been a full-time player. He only had 280 at-bats with the Indians last year. You look at his stats, and he's never had a full year. He's never had, you know, 500, 600 at-bats. That said, he's a 270 career hitter. Last year, he hit 318. He hit, like, 354 or something like that against lefties. And obviously, supreme defense. His UZR report isn't the best, but it's well above average. He had that you know, top play of the year catch at Fenway, where he went over the bullpen.
That was amazing. That
was just an incredible catch. And I know that's just a highlight reel. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But it was still fun to watch. But he's really excited to come here. And, you know, he's got a lot of speed. He's, you know, got quite a bit of stolen bases. He's not a power hitter. Hits about 6 or 7 home runs a year. At AT&T, I think you could expect, you know, 5-ish kind of thing. So typical leadoff type hitter or 8 hitter. But he definitely upgrades the defense. He definitely upgrades the flexibility off the bench. And he's not a bad hitter. I mean, like I said, a 270 career hitter. So he's not chump change. He's not Marvin Bernard or someone like that.
He had a pretty good walk rate last year. For the first time in his career, he was over 10%. And the Indians used him a lot as depth, as the fourth outfielder. They shifted him all over the outfield sometimes. And I heard Bobby Evans in an interview say that they're still looking and exploring center field options, and that Jackson might have just been added for that depth. Also, we know that young Steven Duggar is being invited to spring training, and it sounds like he's going to get the chance to compete for the same job. So it's a possibility that he steps in and takes it, and Jackson just spells everybody all around the outfield. But it added depth for $3 million. And like you said, I mean, him being that value, that was a steal in this. I don't even know if it's, you know, a steal in the market. It's just a steal for the Giants. If it all works out, I think it escalates to like $8.5 million. Yeah. But he might not even get enough at-bats if he is relegated to a depth player. Once again, though, this is a move that speaks to the Giants creating some depth.
It is. It's fantastic. So we got about 5 minutes left here before I got to take my kid to a lesson. So let's try to blow through this real quick. But
all right.
As far as lineups, I've seen some lineups from some of the bloggers. And I'll just give you my lineup real quick and then tell you why I did this. So Austin Jackson definitely is not an everyday center fielder. He's going to probably, you know, platoon with Duggar or someone else. But he's kind of inserted right now in terms of positioning. So I think it's going to be Kutch, Panic, P- Posey, Longoria, Belt, Pence, Crawford, and then Austin Jackson in the pitcher. Now, most of the lineups I've seen have Posey in his traditional four spot with Longoria ahead of him. Now, the reason I think it should be 3-4 instead of 4-3 for Posey is, you know, traditionally you put your best hitter number three. I still think Posey's the Giants' best pure hitter. He certainly has the best average of all those players. He consistently hits generally over 300. He doesn't have as much power as Longoria. I think that's a known fact. I'm not saying he has no power, but look at Longoria, 20 home runs in 8-plus seasons, right?
Yeah.
Posey hasn't done that. So it just makes sense to me. And then the final piece is Posey's never really had anyone to protect him. And, you know, Jeff Kent flourished with the Giants having Bonds protect him. I think that putting Posey in the number three spot, which I still believe is his natural hitting slot, even though he's always hit fourth traditionally, I think with Longo behind him, it's just going to elevate his numbers. And to me, it just makes sense. Have the guy who can hit a few more bombs behind you. Posey's got a higher average, and now he's going to be protected. So that's my main argument for putting Posey there. And then additionally, it's right, left, right, right, which is the same if you swap Longoria and Posey. Left, right, left, right. So you kind of balance out the lefty-righty combo. But I've seen many other permutations, including putting, you know, Jackson first, which I don't agree with.
No.
putting Belt a little lower, which I can see. But again, I was trying to balance out the righty-lefty kind of matchups.
Yeah, I tried to do that with Belt too, but it's tough because Belt has more power than Crawford, so you want to put him in that five slot. And
exactly,
you sold me. I wrote it the other way. I wrote my lineup down. We did it before the show, and mine was I had Kutch, Panic, Longo, Posey, Belt, Crawford, Pence, Jackson / Duggar, and then the pitcher. And as far as Longo and Posey, I 100% agree. I would love to see that switched. I've always also advocated for Posey to hit third. I just wrote him down fourth out of habit. I totally did.
Well, and, yeah, he's always there. So
yeah, he really is. But I totally agree about splitting up the left, right, left. But like, I worry that Pence just, you know what I mean? Sometimes he can, yeah. I don't want to say he's a rally killer, but he's just not as consistent as he used to be.
No, not at all.
And like I said, we want Belt, but Pence also has that pop. But Crawford has a little bit of pop too. Pence has more, so I can see. I see your lineup as more of a realistic shot with Bochy, because I mean he's liked to do the right left thing right there from Longoria to Crawford, and then you know righty for Jackson if he's there. So I can see that happening. I feel comfortable with that lineup, and I feel comfortable with you know. I just like having Longoria and McCutcheon in that lineup. We have speed and power now because Kutch can hit all fields.
Out of the eight position players, you know, we've taken 25% of it and upgraded it, which, yeah. You know, with power and speed, which is great. So, you know, a lot of the Giants' problems last year, aside from pitching, when you just look at offense, it really was, you know, just trying to get those rallies started and trying to knock in those runs. And these two guys are certainly going to extend rallies. They're certainly going to knock in runs. So I completely see the Giants increasing their run production in 2018. I don't think that's going to be an issue. But
so now they got to look for pitching. That's
yeah,
really
the pitching is going to be the issue because we got you know Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija as the top three, and Cueto's going to be a question mark, and we won't go into that right now. Before five, I would you know clearly Ty Block is going to be in the mix.
Right.
But they just re-signed Chris Stratton to a minor league deal, and
Heston.
They don't have anyone. Sorry, I said Stratton. I meant Heston. Thank you.
I just noticed it as you said it because I saw both names on my board.
Yeah, it's all the Chris's, right? So
yeah.
You have Heston re-signed. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with their starting lineup because you know they traded away Matt Moore to Texas, which we didn't even mention at the top of the show. And
good riddance.
You know, obviously, yeah, he's you know he had the highest ERA in the NL of qualifying pitchers, so it's not like he was shit for the Giants.
It didn't work. Let him try.
It just didn't
else.
Work out here. And you know, if he goes to Texas and he hit, you know posts a 3.0 ERA, good for him. But it doesn't mean that was going to happen with San Francisco. But yeah, I think the pitching is going to be a big question mark this year. I think the bullpen is going to be slightly upgraded with the return of Will Smith. You know, obviously Madison Bumgarner is going to be hopefully healthy and not ride motorbikes in the middle of the year. Hopefully that will work out.
And they already have Strickland and Dyson and Melanson in the bullpen. Stratton could be either like the long man or compete for a rotation spot. Guerin's still around. So the starting pitching is just like the biggest question, if they're just going to throw a bunch of guys together or if they're going to go out and get one more guy.
Right. All right. Well, I got to go here, but let's just go really quick. The Hall of Fame vote just came out yesterday. Bonds got 56.4% of the vote, which is a little lower than I think was forecast.
Yeah.
He's got four more years of eligibility. We'll see what happens. He's still trending upward, but it's going to be close. It's slowed down. I think he was on the trajectory to hit 75%, but I don't know now. I really don't. He's got four shots left, so we still don't know. And I think a lot's going to change when he gets to that second to the last and the last year. I think that could change some hearts and some older fuddy-duddies who don't actively broadcast are going to lose their BBWWA, voting credentials by then. But we're going to see here in a couple of years. But that's a whole podcast we could talk about.
we can save that one for next another time. I have a lot of thoughts on that, what too. The Giants should do. So I really think we'll save that for another one.
Okay. And the Giants got, of course, a few new coaches. Which we can talk about next time.
Alonzo Powell is the new hitting coach from Houston.
Yeah, they kind of switched some players around or some coaches around.
Right. It's not that Kurt bad. Young pitching, and then Bam Bam's now the bench coach, and Wotus is coaching third.
Yep. All right. Well, sorry for the short podcast, but you probably appreciate that because we didn't drone on too long.
Not at all. We're back, baby.
We're back, baby. And actually, so just really quick, we are going to try and set up some live video streaming through Facebook, YouTube, or all of the above. It's yet to be determined, and we're probably going to set up some Patreon and other financial accounts because we have gotten to a point where we have to put a little bit more money into this shindig to keep it going. But we're managing right now, so look forward to that in the future. Anyway, Ben and Willie couldn't join us today because we did an odd time, and we basically didn't include them because we're jerks.
It's all right.
They're busy. So you can follow us at on Twitter at TortureCast or Facebook at Facebook.com/TortureCast. You can follow us individually at ChadK21, at Fried Duck for Ben, at Willie Dills for Willie, and, of course, Eric at 2OutHits with the number 2. So we will be back next week, and hopefully we'll have some streaming action going. But for everyone not here today, and for Eric, this is Chad signing off on episode 132. We'll see you next time for 133. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.